Hey everybody, thanks for listening. This is the second part of our April podcast, which I broke up just because it was getting really, really long. So if you're looking for part one, it came out a couple of weeks ago. And in there, we talk about the winter 2020 shows that we finished up. And in this one, we're talking about the new spring 2020 season.
Okay, so we've put to bed the winter 2020 season, and now we are jumping into the spring 2020 season. Now,
I just, since the part, we've recorded part one and two at different times, I just wanted to mention that I personally finished the Case Files of Richard Jewell and Vinland Saga. We're not going to be talking about them in this part, but if people really want to hear my thoughts, they should write in. And we could do that in the next podcast.
great plan. And even if they don't, I want to hear your thoughts. So, before we get into the shows we've been watching for spring 2020, I just want to allude back to something we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, which is that a lot of shows have now announced either postponements or delays due to COVID-19. And so some of the shows we're going to be talking about maybe won't have new episodes for a while, but that doesn't mean they're not worth talking about. And we want to make sure that if we like the shows that we're talking about them so that when they do come back, we don't miss out on seeing them. I'm like a little worried that, due to these kinds of situations, like what does that do to the momentum of the show and how many people end up actually seeing it due to these circumstances?
I think that it's very easy with just how hectic people's lives are. A lot of people have more free time, but also in a weird way, less free time. So it could be even easier than it is normally with a hectic lifestyle to overlook some shows. So, I think we want to point out some of the ones we really liked just to keep them in people's heads.
I know it also makes me curious what's going to happen to the summer shows. Are summer shows being worked on? Is there going to be a delay in when those come out? Are they going to be put, I'm sure that a lot of those questions are being asked but not answered, and I'm sure there's a lot of discussions going on, but I'm in because the situation is sort of unique. I'm interested in how this might affect the summer season as well. And I know that on the there was a big like master list of things that have announced postponements and delays. And one of the things that is on there is actually Promised Neverland season two, which isn't even I think it's a fall show. So it's interesting, that they've already kind of like announced something that's like in such pre-production almost that is being delayed.
It might be also certain shows are in like basically show blocks. So if like a Noitamina show has what shows are going to be in the schedule, so it might be a knock-on effect if the show that would come out in the summer is already delayed to the fall, then the fall show has to basically move its spot in the basically that time block. So I wonder if that's a number of shows like that.
But I did want to mention that the Detective Conan movie, which was supposed to be out, I think this week, is being delayed its release. So it's finished, it's completed, but its usual time for coming out is around Golden Week, and they have decided not to release it, so no information yet, I think, about when that will be coming out. And interestingly, if you watch the trailer for that movie, it also seems to have some Olympic stuff in it. So it's like double, has kind of like, it already is like dates it because that's not happening. And I wonder if they're also kind of concerned about it just content wise. I'm obviously, since I haven't seen it, I don't know how much it factors in, but.
Oh yeah, I know the final Heaven's Feel movie was supposed to come out when this, not that long after this started, and they even had in the Grand Order game, they had announced like, oh, these are the cards that are going to come out in the game for the release, and we're going to do all these things, and that's just put on, even though they've made all these big announcements, that's been on basically put on an indefinite hold until that movie can come out in theaters. So, yeah, no, a lot of stuff that was just about to be on Jump basically has to be delayed.
All right, so let's jump into all the spring 20 shows. I think we actually watched quite a few first episodes, so back to more of our like usual amount, I think. Although I didn't actually watch anything that was super terrible.
I did.
And I didn't pick it, so now you can't blame me and say, "Oh, it's Kate who sets the schedule of shows." So if we watch something bad, it's her fault. Well,
I did skip a bunch of stuff that was bad. It was just like, it was almost like I got cocky, like I had been picking enough good shows that I was like, let me try a long shot one, and oh boy.
we're not going to talk about that. As our usual way of doing things, I'd say we are going to start with the detective shows of the season. And I like that we multiple seasons in a row now get to say we're going to review the detective shows plural first. Like, it's just nice that I even have that many to like watch and talk about.
Plus, Kate, let's also be real. It also gives us a higher chance that at least one of them is a Garbo.
I'm sure that they can prove us wrong, but so let's start with one that I think has made a little bit of a splash, which is Millionaire Detective Balance Unlimited, which sounds like the most ridiculous title, and and it is, by the way. That is just insane. And the premise, I feel like the premise is literally, they actually did just sum it up right there. It's about this privileged, entitled guy who shows up in Japan and basically pays to become a police detective. And as far as I can tell, at least from the first episode, does no actual detective work. And his superpower is money. And he is, has like kind of, there's like a buddy cop dynamic. So there's an actual detective and police officer that, first inadvertently gets teamed up with him and then becomes permanently teamed up with him. And he is, at least by my standards, the more interesting character, who has sort of been, it seems like he's been demoted. He's not part of like the A team detective force anymore, and we don't really know why, but he also can't get over it and is always kind of sticking his nose in the business of the other detective groups.
Yeah, boy, I really hated this show. Like, but the first thing this super reminded me of was, if anybody remembers, there was this show that super duper became a meme called Government Crime Investigation Agent Zaizen Jotaro. And most people remember it for two reasons. One, it had a notoriously low budget, so the animation was super wonky. And two, the guy's Jotaro's catchphrase was "da bomb," and that caught on. But it essentially had the same premise that there was this super government agent that through his agency had this black card that had unlimited funds, and he would fight crime with it. Like in the first episode, there's a smuggling ring, so he just buys the airport so he can investigate it.
This guy would definitely do that.
Zaizen Jitaro 1000% takes the premise of the show super serious. It does it all with a straight face. And this show feels like somebody saw that and said, "What if we did that but do it tongue in cheek?"
But you still hated it.
You would think that I would enjoy this show. And I think the reason that I hated it as much as I did, because as we mentioned, we won't be talking about it, but the Shiro Neko project was undoubtedly a worse series. This show looks pretty good.
Oh, it looks great.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. The main guy, not the asshole detective, not the millionaire detective, but the regular detective, I actually liked his character, and I was actually kind of curious what his deal was. And the premise of let's take Zaizen Jitaro, but have fun with it. All of those things made me want to like the show. So when it turned out so badly, it actually pissed me off more than Shiro Neko Project, because that one just. This one had promise that disappointed me, which I think annoyed me far more. It's just the main guy is so insufferable.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I guess I feel like there's more to the story. I don't know. I guess I sense that I almost feel like they were trying to make him so insufferable, to the point where you're there's that part where he smokes the cigar, or the part where he just buys the car or whatever,
Or
and
lets his partner almost fall to his death.
and also, like I s mentioned, in my opinion, he does zero detective work in this episode. He tells his Jarvis Butler, virtual assistant, whoever that is, to that person is a detective. That person is the hero of the story. I don't know,
It would be like if Batman just paid Alfred to go out and beat up criminals and take them to jail.
I mean, obviously the virtual assistant didn't beat anybody up, but it did all the investigative research. It was the thing. Anyway, this guy hasn't done anything except have money. So, I guess. And of course, yeah, there's some dynamic, there's the dynamic between him and the regular cop, but just I guess it was enough to make me curious about, 'cause I don't understand what his motivations are, unless his motivations are just I'm rich and I can do whatever I want, which I think you're supposed to think that's his motivation, but it's a really specific. I mean, he used his money to join the Japanese police force and a really low, a weird branch of it. So I feel like there has to be a reason. Otherwise, why bother? Almost why bother putting yourself in the in bureaucracy? Just be Bat fucking man and use your money to do whatever you want and solve crime.
I totally don't blame you for wanting to see if the show improves. Because, like I said, the actual main character is a good character. You know what? It gave me, and this is so weird, but it gave me this Buttons and Mindy feeling from Animaniacs, if anybody who watches this show, listens to this podcast, remembers that, where like I just have a feeling, and I could be wrong, so if you watch more of the show and it changes, you could tell me and maybe I'll go into it. But it just feels like the main guy is going to be Buttons, who has to just go out of his way to do the real detective work, while the millionaire detective just shits all over him as the Mindy of the show. And that's.
And takes all the credit.
Yeah. And that's supposed to be. And like. And they just go, bad cop! Bad Buttons cop! And like that just. I hated. That was like my least favorite of all of the Animaniacs sketches. And it just. Like, it only came to me just now as we were talking about it. This dude just rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, I am definitely going to watch at least like a couple more episodes because I don't feel like it has revealed what the actual story is. So I think this one is based on a novel. I think actually both detective shows are based on a novel, which gives me also like minor more like I don't know, it just gives me like a little bit more hope. You know, makes me curious to know what's actually going on. And final thought about it, great car.
Oh yeah, no. His car was definitely like what's his name? Kato, the asshole detective. His car was definitely a better character than he was.
Well, which car? The car he starts with or the car he ends with?
I actually kind of like both, but
Yeah, but like, yeah, the car that's going to become the iconic car, it's in the promotional material. So the car that he buys in the episode, great, great car. I agree. That car is a character. I hope that car has a long life and does not get exploded like Burn Notice style every few episodes. Okay, but since I also mentioned, you know, that the other detective show is, I believe, also based on a novel. So let's jump into that one, which is Woodpecker Detective's Office. So I feel like these two shows could not be more, or at least the characters could not be like more far from each other. And also, like, Millionaire Detective is like the modern day. Actually, I don't know if you even noticed, but like in the first episode of Millionaire Detective, there's like a huge crowd scene and everybody is wearing a face mask. It was like a far away shot, but like overhead, and like everybody was wearing a face mask. So, but then Woodpecker's Detective Office is like set in the past. I think maybe it's Taisho era. And it's like just like much more like cozy and classic detective. I mean, it also it has the, you know, the buddy dynamic of the eccentric detective and sort of his sidekick who is there to kind of ground him and help him out, but also to be amazed by him.
He's definitely like the Watson to this guy's Sherlock. And I definitely get a little, if you've watched the second episode, he definitely even comes off more Sherlockian just in like his general attitude. Like it definitely, certain aspects of this definitely feel like an homage to the Sherlock Holmes mysteries.
And I really liked it. You know, we have our, he's a poet. He is perpetually broke. And his friend that he makes at the boarding house, you know, kind of pulls him out of a few money-related jams. And then by the end of the episode, after sort of solving a crime, I guess, or at least protecting the innocent, let us say, he decides that like he really does need to make money in some way and like, hey, why not be a PI?
Because he's like, poets and detectives aren't that different. And like throughout the whole episode, Kyosuke, his friend, is like, you real like we're they're always like every time he says that they're off to do something, but he's always like, you really have to explain that because that is not an obvious statement, my friend.
I feel like it isn't, but at the same time, I like totally got it immediately because it's just such like a, it's such a dramatic or like romantic thing to say, you know, that like they're like observers of the world. They like look at the world in like a really different way, and they like specific. It's so specific, and like the way that they observe things. I think that the mystery itself. You know, it was a this one was a murder mystery, and I don't know if you know that will be like the bread and butter of the series. I hope so. I love murder mysteries are my favorites.
The preview did show that at least the next case there's a murder mystery.
Great. All murder mysteries. Let's go for it.
But it is interesting also that the framing device for this is, and this is not a spoiler because it happens, it literally, this is how it begins. You see Kyosuke, like, much older, coming back to the old house where, as we find out in the end, they open up the Woodpecker Detective Agency, and he's like there to like, I don't, if they mentioned what he was there to do, I don't remember. And he like starts basically reminiscing about like the time with my old friend, which also once again gives it much more of a Sherlockian feel, because he has the Watson. It's like, let me chronicle, the adventures I had with my most brilliant but eccentric old friend as we, unlikely partners, solved all these fantastical cases.
Well, not fantastical.
Well, I guess, like, extraordinary, I should say. More, yes, you are correct. Fantastical implies, like, magic and the such. I just mean like you're shockingly odd is more, but perhaps only cases my insightful friend could have solved.
Only a poet could solve. I also, you know, and that we saw that at least the opening, and then also we get hints that there's kind of also a larger cast that might, you know, play a role in it. I don't know if they're going to be just like friends, or do they help them solve cases? Are they their like muscle? I don't know, like whatever, you know, whatever they need.
Well, like the first like character who gets like drawn in is a fellow member of the main character's poetry society.
And also, like in a government official or something.
But he's also, but the important part of what his government position is he's like head of the military medical office. So he will clearly have to like come in and like do an autopsy or like, this wound suggests this kind of
He's
weapon.
the coroner.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be like the coroner and/or medical expert on some later mystery. I will bet money on that. Or if he isn't that, he'll like introduce him to somebody in his like, this is my brilliant, medical examiner for the military thing, and he will either be their medical examiner or introduce them to that person.
I'm also curious if they're going to have like a continued antagonistic relationship with the police. very, Lestrade or like Scotland Yard-esque. Yeah, it laid a lot of good bones in the first episode, I think. And I liked that he I liked and didn't like, I guess, that he did a lot of guessing. And I mean, he was right, but sometimes it was like a little unclear how he got to that place. But I also like appreciated his pursuit of like his goals, I guess, are interesting, I guess I should say.
I mean, I don't want to go give too much away, but it's just the first episode. But essentially, what I thought was most interesting was that he doesn't actually solve this case. All he does is make sure that an innocent man doesn't go to jail. And you get the feeling that he knows who committed the murder. But essentially, he's like, I can't get, I'm like 99% sure that the evidence that I would need to get has been destroyed. So what I need to do is make sure that this person, who I'm sure is innocent, doesn't get blamed for the crime. And I know it just gives a very interesting insight into what kind of detective he is, of like what he considers his priorities of justice and mystery solving, which I think is always very good to establish with your first case.
I will definitely be watching more of this show as well.
No, it seemed like, obviously, in my opinion, it was more solid than two, although that was not like, but do not take that low bar that it had to jump over in my case to say that this show was not very good. And once again, also, it's just worth noting that it does really like bathe in the mood and the time period. And it was Taisho era because he mentioned it came up because of his poetry. And he mentioned like the like part of the Taisho era like poetry club or something like that. So they did mention that because it came up as part of it came up in a random line of dialogue. Although I'm pretty sure like if you were Japanese, just the setting alone could probably tip you off, but yeah. You are correct, Kate.
All right, so now we're going to move on to the section that we're calling, I don't know, sound words in titles. There's not, that's the only thing that connects these shows. They're very different from each other, but it somehow seemed that they should be grouped together anyway.
Ah, Kate, we should have named this. You wouldn't have been able to do it because you've never seen Ras Efod, but The World Suffused with Sound. Because that's like the like catchphrase they always use to end all the episode previews in Ras Efod.
That sounds very dramatic in the best way.
Ras Efod is a very dramatic show, but
Melodramatic, that was actually the word I was looking for. And I think that would have fit in great with listeners. I'm pretty far along in this one, so my opinions, I'm just going to try to, remember just the first episode, but or talk, not talk too spoilery, about the show.
Yeah,
But
I've only seen the first episode, but it is definitely like on my to watch list.
So why don't you kick it off, Al?
So we start off in like a huge junkyard, and there's this city that generally seems to be built on ruins. And this kid, he's like digging through the junk for useful parts, and he finds a passed out girl who he brings home, and she has amnesia, but they notice that she has this jack, almost like a cyber jack, in her, but it looks more like an audio jack. And they know that she's like one of these, like, what do they call them again, Kate?
Listeners.
She's a listener. That should have been obvious, but I did watch this a few days ago, so. But she's like, could you explain to me what a listener is? Because I don't remember that. You guys seem to think that's really cool, but since I have amnesia, that means nothing to me.
I will say the kid thinks that's really cool. The town does not think that's very cool. And he's like a fanboy for these listeners that are basically they're giant robot pilots who fight.
But
and they also defend them from the earless,
which are these giant staticky creatures that have been, you know, a real problem on this world. But fortunately, Kate, there hasn't been any earless attacking the city in the longest amount of time, and that will surely never change.
And the city has sort of a history of, like, the reason it's in ruins has to do with a listener that was there and a battle that happened. And so over the course of the episode, we learn a little bit about, like, what happened and, like, what these creatures mean to the group. Our child who found the girl has happened to be able to create his own robot, and by the end of the episode, spoilers, she pilots it, and they have to get out of town real fast. And then it becomes sort of this road, a little bit of like a road trip story, and also, you know, trying to figure out who she is, and they're also kind of exploring the world and what listeners are, what the earless are. So there's just like kind of a long journey that doesn't really fully have a destination yet, I don't think. And it's a really, really music heavy reference show. And it also might, if you just look at it, you're like, gosh, this looks so kind of looks a little familiar. Like, something about it looks a little like I've seen these designs before.
No, because I didn't know anything about the show going in. I just, like, let it wash over me. But as I was watching it, I kept thinking one show. And then at the end, they're like, one of the most famous listeners. I think it was the sister who mentions him. It's like, she reminds me of one of the most famous listeners, Jimmy Stonefree. And I was like, wait a minute. You're using, what do you call it, combination musical references. And when the finish was over, I'm like, written by Daisato. Bunches of Eureka 7. Staff members, I knew it!
Yeah, it definitely, you know, like, you can, you know, he really has a thing that he likes, and, you know, it's just, it's here again, and it's also, this is also one of MAPPA's, shows of the season, so, it has a little bit of like a CG mix with the 2D Well, I want to get your did you enjoy the first episode or like?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, if anything, and we'll see how this goes, but I think we were joking before that, like, a lot of us were worried that was Eureka 7 this weird, fluke? Because, like, everything past the original series, which we both loved, everything Eureka 7 after that has just been so lesser quality that I know that it just it, we've always been a little worried that, like, was that like just this once in a lifetime, like, or like like I said, a fluke. But this gave me a lot of good Eureka, like, what I liked about Eureka 7 vibes, like the fun world that, like, they explain just enough so you're like intrigued, but leave enough open that, like, there's like that we can learn as we go along, but also a lot of it you just learn from, like, the nice visual storytelling. And like, I like the general dynamic between the two characters. But they're not exactly Renton and Eureka, so it's not like it's they're just doing the old show that worked well with, like, a slightly different twist. Although I was like the build up to what you think is a naughty situation but isn't, like, maybe happened one too many times, but it wasn't, it wasn't enough to, like, in any way detract from my enjoyment of the show. But yeah, no, I very much enjoyed it.
I really can't wait for you to like catch up a little bit because I don't know if this show obviously gave me some Eureka 7 vibes when I was watching it, but like the more that I watch it, and I don't know if everybody, first of all, I don't think it can reach the heights of Eureka 7. Sorry, I just don't think it's possible, but the show kind of gives me Tomino vibes. So that's like not necessarily a positive for a lot of people, but like I just feel like there's a lot of like shouting feelings. There's obviously robots. There's just like kind of people being weird and then also dumb and then like people being like there being some like very weird situations in which like humor is brought in all of a sudden and you're like, but like was that the moment for this? I'm not sure. So like I'm not sure how I feel about this show. Like I definitely like I don't know if it has like the emotional resonance that Eureka 7 does, but I think it has a lot of other things that are enjoyable about
I
it.
mean, I just want, like, a cool robot show with a cool aesthetic. That's
I
really
mean,
all I hope from this.
it's got that, and like by the fourth episode in particular is so music reference heavy, it's kind of insane. And also will be really familiar to anybody who like what like really grew up in the 90s. So I am very excited for you to get to that. But yeah, like I don't quite know like what I'm fully gonna get out of it, but I am like enjoying, you know, I've seen so far. It is weird, though. It's weird. I think it's weirder, way weirder than Eureka 7.
I mean, I'm pretty, like, I could go for, like, a Tomino-style show.
Obviously.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, Kate, I'm going to bring up its dread name, but only once, and then I have to, like, spit afterwards. But as long as it doesn't go Eureka 7 AO, I'm okay. Puh, 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 puh.
You'll have to tell me about that show. I've never seen it.
Oh, it's really bad. You should never watch it.
Cool.
It's like this weird, like, fan fiction one. It's like one of those weird high-budget fan fiction shows, like Gundam Seed Destiny, where you're like, who gave these obviously bad writers so much money to do this fan-made show that is no way official and should never be considered such?
Okay, how about we just take a real pivot to Wave Listen to Me, which is based on the manga by Hiroki Samura, who is the Blade of the Immortal creator, probably most known for.
And that Wave explains.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, but like, I'm sorry, I like. The visuals were, like, something. I'm like, these visuals are super familiar. I forgot to look it up. But the minute you said that, like, the question that I had while I was watching it was like, duh!
I'm glad I could solve that for you.
Thank you, Kate.
But it's absolutely nothing like Blade of the Immortal, so everybody just get that out of your heads. It's a modern day, this woman kind of gets inadvertently recruited to a radio show that where she kind of just talks about her personal life, but also responds to reader questions. And the pace of this show is like manic. It's so just, like, going a mile a minute. There's so much dialogue. Like, if you're interested in this, you should also just, like, look at the manga, because there's so much dialogue everywhere. And I mean, it's just crazy.
I mean, it starts where she's in the woods and, like, a bear is about to attack her and she's, like, commentating it on the radio, and then you realize that, like, it flips and you realize she's in the studio, and, like, how she does her advice thing is she, like, sets up these weird scenarios that she's in to, like, tell a story while she's also giving people, like, the call-in advice, so it'll shift back from, like, this, like, what she's telling the listeners she's doing while doing the advice show, and or you know, telling about her day, but then it'll also switch to what's really going on in the booth.
It's a wild ride. And, like, I don't, like, the thing that I thought was most, besides that, like, I mean, that was all, like, so unique and interesting, and, like, I just feel like you have not seen this show before. You have not seen this show before, you have not, I feel like her character, she's so, like, kind of abrasive and weird, and, like, I don't feel as though, I don't feel like I've seen a main character woman like her before. Like, I don't know, like, it just feels, even though I'm not 100% certain that I, like, understood it or, like, totally, like, grokked it, I also think it's so interesting and worth seeing.
Plus, I feel, it's just very visually interesting, and, like, I know one of the big problems people have had with both adaptations of Blade of the Immortal is that they never do a good job of adapting that series' crazy visuals to an animated format. And like, no one expects you to do a one-to-one version of Blade of the Immortal because no one just has the time and the money for that. But it's like,
Yeah,
and
but this show is better animated than either of the
yeah.
adaptations. Even giving people a pass. Like this is
Yeah.
still like if the Blade of the Immortal adaptations were animated this way, that would still be better. I mean, they would still be bad because they're just badly done, but like at least it would have looked better. I don't understand why they couldn't get money to do that, but like for this show, which is like the fucking weirdest show and on certainly on the season, if not probably for the year, somehow gets plenty of budget.
Well, I don't even think it's the budget. I think it's just well, it could be the budget as well, but I think it's really smart, like essentially cinematography and direction that lets them not get the full like detail work of the Blade of the Immortal guy, but you still get that feel of the motion and like just the way that they set the scenes, I think, really. And it has a good frantic feel, and it knows when to capture movement more than detail. And I think that's why it just comes off better. And it just pops. It's like when the Science Saru stuff, like, it's not always on model, but you get that beautiful flow that like makes everything feel really satisfying. I feel like that's what this show has. And I feel like even if like the topic doesn't interest you, a lot of people are probably just gonna watch the show for just like the like smartness of the animation. Although, as you said, like the topic and just like the type of main character is unique enough that I feel like especially a lot of the older audiences might just kind of groove into this for just like satisfying a very different itch and like kind of being like this very unique feeling show.
All right, now to another pivot, to Sing Yesterday for me. So this is, I find very interesting that this is getting animated right now. So this is based on a manga that started in the late 90s and ran for like a long, long time, like 20 years, I think.
It ran long enough that it had to switch magazines that it ran in.
And so it's finished though, it's finished up, and now it's getting an animated version, which is just like, I don't know, I feel like we're seeing that a little bit more, you know, that these kind of long, very, very well received series that never got animated, you know, suddenly they're doing so, which I think is really cool. The story of Sing Yesterday for me is very like coming of age. You know, you're out of college, and our main character is working in a convenience store, and he feels like, you know, that he doesn't like fulfilled his hopes, and he kind of meets up with a classmate again who is a teacher, and like she's going through some things, and he also meets a girl who comes to the convenience store like frequently and seems to have like a past with him, who also is sort of in this in-between state in her life, and seemingly, anyway. She has some secrets, of course. And it really, like, it was really good. Like, it's a very, like, emotional, kind of dramatic, not like melodramatic, just like very coming of age type of story. But it's also, I can just tell, you know, that it's just gonna be like, oh, like, do you want to watch this right now? It's gonna be really hard. It's really captures kind of that, I think, that feeling that people talk about, like, in the night, like, that hasn't really gone away in Japan, you know, that sort of disillusionment with society. Like, it's just gonna be like real, guys. And even though it's from like an earlier period, I think that feeling, while depicted kind of differently now, you know, where you see it like a lot more in sort of a fantasy way of isekai and whatnot, I still think it's drawing on the same societal, like, fears and, you know what I'm saying?
Kate, are you saying that a modern audience might click with the idea that you go to school expecting great things and then you have to instead take work that comes to you, and when you call it, feel like a like aimless loser? I'm saying that might be the definition of big mood right now.
Yeah, and you know, and then the idea of like trying to find fulfillment in something else, but like not necessarily being able to move forward. Like, he's like, at the beginning of this story, you know, there's like, it's like in neutral, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, obviously, over the course of the story, hopefully, God, like hopefully, you know, like, the character, all the characters feel this way, though. So, you know, like, that they're gonna, through their interactions, that, like, something will change. I just feel, like I said, I just feel like, it's going to be, like, hard to watch it. And, like, I think it's going to be good, but it's also hard. And I also appreciated that, like, at the very beginning, I was really worried that the convenience store girl was, like, a manic pixie dream girl kind of stereotype. But then, like, immediately, I feel like within the episode, I thought that changed a little bit. What did you think, Al?
No, I like, I'll go into it a little more, but I like, after I watched this though, I like did a little research and I did notice a lot of people's opinion of this show really hinged on how much by the end of the episode people thought that the girl with the crow was a manic pixie dream girl. And like, I feel like the less you felt that way, the more you were inclined to like the show. So I feel like Haru in many ways is gonna be like, it seemed to be like a lot of the show hinged on your opinion of her. I don't know, the show, and maybe it's just because I'm like a dude in my 40s wrestling with a lot of the same things that this character is going through. It really, like, hit me strongly. So, like, I immediately, like, I just watched, like, up to what has been put out. So, like, I guess I'm a little more, I'm still a little worried about, like, what they're going to do with Haru and how much, you know, she could be put onto the sacrificial altar of the manic pixie dream girl. But I don't know. It's definitely a show that, like, like you said, it like almost stews in its melancholy.
And it captures it, I think, like very successfully.
I mean, there's definitely moments of humor and like touching drama, but you cannot ignore just this weight of melancholy. And I feel like I was telling my roommate, like, you've kind of almost got to be in a mood, or like at least not wanting, if sitting in melancholy for 20 minutes is going to turn you off, you do not want to watch the show. Or
Well,
if
that's
like
why I
the
kind of almost want to put a warning. Like, I feel like it's almost, I mean, I think I would feel that way. I would say that about the show anyway, but like it coming out right now, I just feel like it's almost unfortunate for the show because I don't know, like, if I don't know if people are gonna want it, like, even though it's so, I think it's like so well drawn on those feelings and those like things that people are going through, but like I don't know if people want it right now. Like,
I mean, I don't know. I totally get what you're saying, and that's why I went out of the way to make that statement. But it really, I don't know, the show really hit me in a very personal space, to the point where, like, part of like the more objective part of me is like, you're not going to be objective about this review because
But
this.
I like totally agree with you. So like I'm not saying I'm objective or anything, but like I thought it was really good. Like I didn't I don't think I'm disagreeing with you despite any
Yeah.
personal bias you are having about it. So
Yeah, I just I want to.
I know the vibe it's going for. I think it accurately captured it, but I guess what I'm saying is, I feel like it's going to be really hard to watch, and for me, I think it would be really like I don't I want to watch it, but I'm also like I think I have to be in a specific headspace to watch it.
As
And other
someone who
people,
watched four episodes, that mood does not change, Kate.
I don't expect. I mean, no, I hope not. I mean, I think that this like it's successful in it. Like, I don't necessarily think that's bad. Also, when I finished this first episode, as you guys might realize, we didn't watch them together as we usually do. I turned and was like, "So this guy is like, this is like Welcome to the NHK, but like not horrible people." Like,
And I think he's a little more well-adjusted than the Welcome to the Irish K guy, but once again, that's not a huge bar to jump over.
it just I felt like it was I think that they're from similar time periods, and I think that they're calling upon certain similar things in society, I guess, which has, like I said, hasn't gone away.
I mean, I think the fact that like the moment I could tell that like they did nothing to update like the setting is when I think in like the second or third episode a character picks up an old rotary phone to call somebody.
But that's so interesting though, because I think, I mean, maybe they just want to be accurate, but I think they could have updated it and it still would be like, I think all of the, like, that's what I was, I guess that's what I was trying to say earlier, was that I think they could, that is still ever present. Everything in this show, I think, is still there. Even to a modern audience. So like I don't even think they needed to like necessarily set it like how Banana Fish sort of updated itself a little bit. Like I feel like they could have updated it and I think all of it would still work.
I mean, yeah, I
Which
mean,
is
if it
sad. I
was.
mean it's like terrible in a way, but
I mean, yeah, like you said, if it wasn't for COVID, this feels like this would have been the perfect time to bring it out because so much of this is like again, the mood of the world that, like, yeah, I really hope that COVID doesn't, like, bury this show, because I think it speaks to a modern audience supremely well, even though it's set in its time period.
Okay, where do we want to go next? There's so many ways we could take this. We could have theater animal people. We could have driving across America. We could have isekai. We could have dads and daughters.
Okay, let's talk about isekai, because I want something vibrant to talk about after talking about the, what do you call it, the sadness of, what do you call it, what do I do with my life stuck in neutral? That is Sing Yesterday for me.
Cool. Okay, so we're just going to continue on our journey of pivoting to like the furthest thing from whatever we've just talked about. And let's talk about my next life as a villainess. All routes lead to doom. This is an isekai show. And I just want to say up front that I love this show.
That is like a minor miracle in itself. Like I feel like everybody who like listens to this podcast after it's done, this should be like a record scratch in their room, and they like turn to the person next to them and go and like spit take what?
That's why I wanted to say it first thing is that, like, I'm really enjoying this show. I've watched all the episodes that are out. I know. I told our friends.
Kate, did you also feel any special kinship to the main character and it resonate with you and your life?
My life is just like a romance visual novel. I know, big reveal. So yes, in a similar way that Sing Yesterday spoke to Al, this show really spoke to me on a deep emotional level. So the premise here is that this girl, we don't really know what happened to her at this point in the real world, but she wakes up and she is a young girl in a, like this big manor house, and come to find out over the course of the episode that she has awakened in the world of the visual novel that she had been playing, and she is now the villain character, but as like in her childhood. So she's not like the villain of the story yet. It's like pre-villain. And so she then begins this journey of like remembering what happened in, the visual novel, and like trying to like prevent all of the missteps, because the villainous character in the visual novel like either gets like exiled or murdered, like has all these like horrible, obvious bad ends. So she's like, well, if I'm stuck like this, I can't let that happen to me. So,
So I either have to like live a good life, or I have to have some kind of fallback life if I get exiled.
and so, like, it's, but really, the show is, like, now that I've watched 4 episodes of it, like, it's basically just about how to not be a horrible person. It's like how to be friends with people and like be good. And like, so, she she gains a fiance in the first episode as in her childhood because like she falls and she gets like this, you know, scar on her. And so like that's like marked her for life. And so in like apology, the like young prince character is like, well, then like I guess I'll marry you because it's my fault. And so like, of course, at first she's like, this is terrible. Like this is leading to all of this. But like that's kind of what spurns her to like make a change. And so
In the original game, she's like super resentful towards the prince for scarring her beautiful face. So she treats him awfully. And when you call it, so when the main girl of the game comes along, he like wins her over with her, you know, beatific love. And so like in the good, in the bad ending, he like murders her. the villainous character. And in the good ending, she just really gets exiled.
And one of the things I really like in the show is that whenever she comes to like a point in the story where it's like related to the visual novel or like a bad end or like whatever like kind of knowledge that she needs to call upon, there's like a council of little versions of her that like have like mustaches and like monocles and stuff, and they're like discussing like how to, you know, treat the situation. And like she decides that, you know, her new sibling, like instead of being mean to him, like she'll befriend him and they become best friends. Basically, she just becomes best friends with everyone. Like it's just about becoming best friends. And also pretty, like I'm not 100% sure, but I like feel like the show is also maybe leading to like a girl's love ending. I'm not even sure, but like it's just like everyone will now fall in love with her. She is great. She's so nice. She's a good friend. Like it's just about being nice and good and also kind of funny. So like, and she loves to eat cakes.
At least what, and what do you call it? One of the girls who ends up like, if you cause it's a visual novel and like they're all the different hot guys that, you know, the main character could fall in love with. They're like, well, if she, like, you know, falls in love with the brother character, then, you know, the villainous's brother character, then the fiancé, like, wishes them the best of luck. But if you don't end up with him, then he marries the fiancé character. But it's, like, pretty clear that that fiancé character is falling in love with the villainous character now.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention, like, one of my other favorite things is because she's, like, played the game, she kind of, like, has all these, like, memories of it that, like, almost, like, unconsciously. So she'll, like, basically cock block these dudes constantly because she'll, like, take their lines and like, be, like, so like charming and like do something that normally in the visual novel the guy had done. So like, yeah, so that's why I'm like, is it leading to something else? I don't know. And then
plus Kate, if you notice at the end when she's on the beach, the other
she's holding a girl's hand, like I think she's holding the main heroine of the visual novels. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, maybe I don't know. And so I will say that, so she starts as a child and then halfway through or like three quarters of the way through the third episode is the time jump. So then they're in the like time of the actual visual novel happening. I really enjoyed her as a child. It was just like so fun. It was just really, I could have like had that, like it could have been just that for the whole time. And I would have just like enjoyed the hell out of it.
Her and her gardening so she can set up a garden, so she can become a farmer if she ever gets exiled. She'll be like, I'll be a farmer in the new world. And
it's just like, it was so, it's just delightful, you guys. It's not like high art, but it's just really fun. And it's the first, like I said, it seems to be like the first isekai that I'm like really enjoying. And so I feel like that's, like, special.
So, Kate, I have one major criticism. Have you ever read the manga?
I think it's a light novel.
Well, there's also manga, because the manga's out in the U.S. I'm pretty sure it's based on a light novel, but I read the manga. And they go out of their way not to show the main heroine's face in the first volume. It's supposed to be like the big reveal in the second, what she actually looks like.
Oh.
She's only like ever in shadow in the first volume. But like you totally see her in the opening.
I mean, who cares?
It was a joke, but it was just like...
I just find it interesting that they decided to do that, because it's like, yeah, I guess that's important. I don't know.
I mean, plus she's just like generic, cute, like earnest blonde girl. So it's not like there's anything like particularly...
special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, if you guys need like just like a kind of a wacky, fun distraction, definitely recommend. I'm having a real blast watching this show.
Yeah, I think it's just, like, earnestly fun.
Okay, so now we'll go back to something that's, like, earnestly dramatic, I guess, which is Beastars. So this... finally is out on Netflix, so the whole season is up, and I think actually it's getting another season, maybe, but anyway, everything that's out is up, so I feel like it was time to talk about it here, and it's like such a surprising show, I think. I feel like it's not exactly what you expect it to be, or at least it wasn't what I expect. I mean, I've read the manga, but like when I read the manga, it wasn't what I expected it to be. So this is a story about a academy and just like a world of would you say it's anthropomorphized?
Anthropomorphic. You know what, Kate? There's a simple explanation that will make everybody click what this is. Picture Zootopia world.
Okay, yeah. Yes. And the academy... We're at a school academy where carnivores and herbivores are, you know, it's like they go to the same school, they're in the same classes, and they're in the same clubs, but they're also just a little bit divided. And our main character, Lagoshi, is a gray wolf, and he is in the theater club. And in the first episode, a murder takes place. A carnivore kills an herbivore on school property, and they don't know who did it, but it kind of sets off like the tone for the series, and also like this exploration of like instinct and society and also adolescence, and like it's just like kind of, for a thing that's called Beastars, I guess, like, it's a little more deep and dark than you might think it would be.
Plus, I think that, I know the thing that threw off a lot of people was that the main center point is the drama club.
Yeah.
Which is, like... because there's a whole lot of drama club stuff, but there's also kind of like this background murder mystery going on. But there's also a lot of social examination. And definitely heavy metaphor.
Well, you know what? That was the thing, though, that I've watched about 6 episodes of it. But like, that's the thing I'm trying to figure out. Which is like, is it like, I'm not saying it isn't, right? But like, also, is it a metaphor or is it like a story about animals? Like, because like, this is like totally tangential, but like, Lindsay Ellis did this video about the Cats movie. And in there, there's a quote about the Cats musical where, like, this guy is, like, asking Andrew Lloyd Webber, like, so, like, is it, like, a metaphor, you know, is it about this? And he's like, Hal, it's about cats. And, like, so I just, like, I keep hearing that in my head when I'm watching this show because I'm like, is it about, is it, like, a grand metaphor for our society, or is it about animals? Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not, like, 100, I'm, like, not certain what exactly it is, like, totally saying. Not in a bad way, I guess, but.
I get a feeling it's going for stuff. I will have to wait until the end of the first season to see how well it pulls it off, because the metaphors at this point are still a little abstract, which I feel like, I'm guessing, hopefully, assuming that we find out the nature of who the murderer is. If I assume we find out who the murderer is at the end of the first season. I don't know if that is true. But I feel like I'd have a better grasp if they pull it off, or at least how well the metaphor is seen through abstraction. I'm guessing that you'll see that at the end of the first season. Maybe. I don't know. That's just my hope more than my guess.
It's not that I don't think that is possible. It's just I feel like the story, I feel, becomes less about, like, who, like this one incident of a murder, and more about the idea of, like, carnivores, how they are treated in society, what is expected of them in society. Like, because basically, I just feel like the story changes a little bit, like, even within, like the mid episodes. Like, it feels like that's not actually, like, that who did it is, like, kind of irrelevant, and it's about it's about, like, carnivores in this world, you know, don't eat meat, or they're not able to eat meat, and then, like, or it's illegal, you know, like, obviously it's murder, and so, like, what, like, suppressing your nature, and, like, the questions about, like, I don't know, it's just, like, very, very interesting.
Well, I mean, I don't want to go too much into spoilers, so I'm going to try to talk a little around it. But I feel like, from what I've seen, and just what I've read a little bit about the series, like, the idea of her story being so intrinsically linked with, like, lust and sexuality and desire, and also, like, being divorced from it, and repression, and all those various things, makes me feel like all the characters on a certain level are dealing with, it's not always sexual or hunger, but everybody's kind of dealing with societal pressures and how they, that's why I felt like a lot of it feels like metaphor, but I didn't want to, like, once again, I don't want to give too much away, but yeah, I felt like I saw with all the characters we've seen so far about, like, expectations and what people present and what they feel, what they act on, what they repress was going on with everybody. So it seemed much more deliberate and much more about society, but letting at certain times the kind of anthropomorphic ideas make it a little more abstract.
And I do think that also, I think you're right, Al, that there's definitely societal things that it's drawing on. I guess I meant like greater metaphor, and like I'm not sure if they're like, because obviously they're in a society, so like there are societal constraints or whatever. But like also I think that you can map a lot of things, like how you view the world or like how what you're like, I feel like you can map a lot of things onto this. And I guess what I am not sure about is like, am I seeing it in a certain lens? And like, would somebody else be seeing it in a certain lens? And is that really the lens in which it is being told? Or am I mapping things onto it?
That's why I was hoping the end of, at least by the end of the season, I'd have a better idea if like the abstraction works and if it if there is actually abstraction going on in the first place, or am I just reading into things because like I'm like, ah, this show must be deep. And when it's like, now it's about, like you said, it's about cats, man.
Yes. I mean, I hear it in my head every time I'm watching it where I'm like seeing something. Anyway, guys, like if you aren't watching the show, you should absolutely be watching it or reading the manga. I'm also reading the manga. The anime is a little more accessible to me right now, so that's why I'm watching it. It also like the anime is quick because the first volume is covered in the first episode. So like but I feel like this is like a must watch. It's just like a so fascinating.
Oh, I want to bring this up because I was wondering why all these Beastars videos kept coming out and people talking about Beastars. And then Kate was like, oh, I watched the first episode because it just came out on Netflix. And I'm like, ah, that explains why all these videos. But I noticed a trend with a lot of them. Had it be like to defend, like talking about the show, because apparently the second episode made a lot of people, or at least vocal people, write off the show as nothing more than furry porn.
I mean, they're teenagers, and this series discusses sex. And I know that it is shocking to all that teenagers think about sex. They have sex. I mean, we didn't even see anything. Like, I didn't feel like it was there to be particularly. I think it was story based. Like, it's not.
Yeah, no, I just, since apparently it's a thing that other people have to mention, I will mention it here. It is a
Get over
story that
it.
has anthro characters that has sex in it. It is not furry porn. And let us continue on, because for some reason that needed to be said. Apparently.
I mean, I guess, like, whatever. Like, the internet has changed the way we can talk about anthropomorphized characters. So, but anyway, like, serious topics happen. In here, there's a lot of them. Watch it.
Yes, it is a serious story, not Fritz the Cat in the end. So, there's one series I wanted to talk about that Kate didn't watch, which is fine because, like, I feel like the key visual and the premise feels sketch, and it's Kakushigoto, My Dad's Secret Ambition. And so, I think this was the show that, like, made me cocky, Kate, and been like, my guesses about which shows are going to be good and which shows are going to be bad are right. So I should just go with my gut. And then I watched, Shironeko Project. So, you know, pride cometh before the fall, I suppose. So the premise of this series is there is a mangaka who has this super successful manga line that's like, you know, a very high-selling series, but it's kind of a pervy, dirty work. And so when he has a daughter, he vows to, you know, spare her the embarrassment that knowing that her dad writes this super successful dirty manga, so he's going to keep it a secret from her. And by the way, the manga he writes is called The Balls of Fury. And the one page we see is like censored. Like there's a whole bunch of like these, you know, censor bars on it. But we see all the dialogue, and it, you know, the dialogue is essentially, "My God, he's moving his hips so fast, I can't tell how many balls he has."
All right, fine. Point.
And so every day, so sometime between the birth and when we start the series, the mom has passed away. And so the dad has this routine where he dresses up in a business suit and like pretends to go to his, you know, his decently paying office job. And then he goes into this clothing shop that his friend owns, switches into his mangaka gear, and then goes to his secret office where he works on Balls of Fury with his eccentric staff, and he tries to like keep the secret from his daughter. And so like the first episode is he gets like a new editor who isn't like updated, so he brings the new t-shirts for Balls of Fury to the house. And Kate, you will love this. He's like, he talks about how many mangaka have to demand that their shirts be wearable.
What does that mean?
And he's like, so, all too often, if you don't tell people to make the shirts wearable, they'll just be like either like a big kawaii girl's face on it, or like something that you would never like. So they have like a guy with like, you know, just like the most stereotypical anime girl face, just huge all over it with like, you know, a huge rack. Or then there's another one that's just like blurred out. And he's like, so mangaka often have to be like, no, you've just got to have like text in a cool font. Or like a stylish graphic design that just looks awesome. Or a bunch of little icons, and maybe one of the icons is a character's face, so people in the know that it's from the anime, but the mundanes don't know what it is. Oh, and he basically, anytime anybody asks for like a picture, he always does Precure. Because like once I went to the school, and a bunch of kids recognized me, so I had to do Precure for them because they heard that I was a mangaka. and I couldn't draw the manga that I work on.
Oh, that's so. Okay.
And they're like, "You've gotten really good at drawing this season's Precure." And he goes, "I know. I run into a lot of people who know who I am." So I don't know. Oh, so the reason I also watch this show is I eventually it is by Koji Kumeda, who is the author of Sayonara Zezabo Sensei, and is also the mentor and for Kenjiro Hata, which oh, why would which should instantly explain why thereby I would be interested in the series. And the other thing is I'm waiting for the reveal because Kumeda is infamous for in the last volume putting on some bizarro twist to the scenario.
Oh, right.
So I am really curious what the finale of this series is going to be. But I mean, I really enjoyed it. I feel like I gave there's some really good tongue-in-cheek things. So I really enjoyed it. It's definitely like Kumeda style humor. And it's definitely a little twisted, but I mean that's Kumeda, so also I like his staff, especially like the super cynical female staff member that works under him. So I think it's a fun little show. I realize the premise will turn a lot of people off, and I was a little hesitant to watch the show, but if you can put up with Kumeda's oddities, I really thought it was enjoyable. And once again, Kate, my only thing that might, I think, win you over is his daughter did make a little detective agency with her friends in class. So, you know.
I mean, I agree with her instincts. All right, so we're gonna end the podcast with a Apare Ranman. So this is the new PA work show, and it's a really kind of wild, wacky.
Here is my quick summary. If you can't wait for Steel Ball Run, this might be the show you watch.
I thought about that too. It's this is like a little later period, but it is about essentially a car race across America from LA to the other coast. So our main characters are Apare, who is a really sort of eccentric inventor who you have to watch the whole first episode to understand how they get to America. He has his samurai companion, and kind of the their course is one full of misunderstandings and misadventure for sure, and very opposites characters. Kosame is very much like trying to be responsible, and Apare is like very much doesn't feel like society understands him or is really like is big enough for his big ideas.
Apare really reminded me of Dr. Stone in his love of science and inventing and how it just puts these weird horse blinders on him where that's what he sees and like the rest of the world like does not matter as much. What he wants to do is innovate and learn about the world and just explore science. And what do you call it? Everything else is just getting in his way.
That's pretty accurate. And I also have to say, like, the design of this show is so outlandish. Like I know that oftentimes when you watch anime, right, there's like, oh, well, that person doesn't have like cool hair, so we know that they're like a side character or whatever. I feel like this show has that turned up pretty high, where like all of the main cast not only has wild hair, they have these outrageous outfits, this outrageous hair. Sometimes they have outrageous makeup. And then like everybody else is like the most generic looking person ever.
Because we see, at least so far, all the main racers at the very, like, we get the, and they're off! And so we see, like, some people might come in later, but we see, like, the main racers. And yeah, like Kate said, they all have crazy cars, and what do you call it? The most out, and everybody's crazy car is only topped by their insane driving or driving teams.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a bit, you know, like Red Line, you know, of like, just the over the topness of every like detail of these characters, except for Kosame, who is like the straight man. So like he looks, you know, pretty like, but he's got, you know, he's got a, having watched a little more of it, you know, he's got a story too. So it's not just like, I don't feel like the show is simply like visual wackiness, but like it is also about like a $1 million car race across America, so hopefully there's a lot of like wackiness in it.
My roommate is just hoping that really, really, really there's a subplot about this race being a secret project to gather the corpse parts of the most famous zombie in the world. But I'm guessing that won't be the case.
You never know. I liked that it was, again, it just feels kind of like, even though, yes, JoJo's is having a race across America, like, it still feels like, this is fun. You know, I'm also curious, always curious to see what Japan thinks of America. And so, like, this is probably, I'm thinking this is, like, 1910s or so, like, you know, it's obviously past turn of the century, but it doesn't feel like World War I has happened. So, like...
So, yeah, no, Kate, it's set in the Taisho era, because the main guy mentions that, like, just a few years ago, he was the ban on books from the outside had been lifted. And so it has to be around 1912. Because that's the beginning of the Taisho era, and that's just when the ban would have gone up.
Okay, yeah, then that makes sense. And then it seemed pre-World War I to me, which is also not until a little bit later. So, okay, so yeah. So we're thinking, all right. But yeah, like, so anyway, what I was totally getting at, did I even say it? I don't remember. Is that, like, I was interested to see what Japan thinks of America, or, like, what, so now they're going to cross America, so, like, what do they think that looks like? Who will they encounter? Like, you know, obviously the show is drawing on some, like, pretty, like I said, like, big personality looks of things, which I think could possibly skew insensitive, depending on, like, how that lands as they go through, like, different parts of America, I guess. But
also, I'm very curious, because there's a third member of their team who definitely has darker skin than the rest of them. They haven't introduced them yet, so they're definitely...
They do in the second episode.
Okay, I only watched the first episode. So, like, I feel like you might know better, but I feel like they might be a good barometer of how sensitive or insensitive, depending on what their background is and how they're treated as a character.
Yeah, that, like, I think it's unclear still.
Yeah, that just that character alone struck me as like the first, the first barometer.
Yeah, I'm very curious how that's going to go as well, and like, but it, and also like, but like everybody, I don't know. It's one of those things where like everybody dresses so outlandishly, so like, it, you know, it'll, I don't, anyway, I feel like there's a couple of ways you could view it, and I don't have all the information, and like, also I don't have like, I you know, I think different people are going to feel differently probably about it depending. But I don't, also by the second episode, they've been introduced, but we don't really have their story yet. So I'm not 100% certain, you know, what that is.
It is good to bring up, but not to make judgment. There was nothing that, well, they fucked this up, but that's not to say that won't happen in the future, but like, I don't know. The axe has yet to come down either way.
Yeah, but like, I mean, very like, again, kind of a show. I don't know. I feel like almost maybe the theme of this season is sort of like, hey man, this is a bunch of different feeling shows. Like they all, I don't know. There's just like a, like every, a lot of like fresh, different, you know, variety of things that I don't feel like I've seen at all before.
I mean, even the two shows that are set in the Taisho era are 1000% different from each other.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that one doesn't feel like fresh and new, you know, but like that one felt like it was going to be good. But like, I do feel like there's just like a lot, like this, I don't know, that just feels like maybe a list of different things. A lot of different things to try. A buffet.
Yeah, no, I mean, even if like, there are a whole bunch of shows of things you like, it could feel a little overwhelming. So like a season like this, that's very mixed up. And, you know, just a very champlu kind of feeling. I feel like if nothing else, you'll probably find at least one that you like, hopefully.
And we didn't even talk about everything that we watched. So like, I think we just really pulled out kind of the standouts. And so, yeah, it just seems like a really good season. And, you know, obviously, as we said at the beginning, some of these shows are in flux because of everything that's going on, but I hope that that doesn't diminish any of the goodness that's here.
I mean, like one of the shows that I've been watching, Index, went on, it started last season and it took like a month off and it put out a few other episodes and it's back on hiatus again, which I mean, hopefully is just so that, what do you call it, to protect the animators who are working on it. A lot of these shows might come back in and out or just not come out till next season. But yeah, no, when, if you like these shows more than you normally do, try to remember the shows that you like, because it's so easy to forget shows if you don't watch them for a week or two in the best of circumstances. I just feel like, you know, try to put it a little more, because it would be horrible for these shows to like just, you know, get hurt by things outside their control.
Yeah, I'm just going to try to, you know, really champion them as much as I can. And, of course, we will probably do a wrap-up of anything that we do get to finish. So Thanks for listening this month. I know it was a long one, and really appreciate that you have stuck with us during this time.
Everybody just stay safe, stay healthy, and what do you call it? Hopefully we get all through this together.
We'll see you next month, or listen to you next month, whatever.